Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, a broken laser printer sold for $14. That's how it started 10 years ago. Today, eBay, the internet auction company, is worth over $60 billion, an online giant by any standard. But is eBay getting greedy? 2 weeks ago, the company hiked the fees it charges its online sellers. Some of those sellers are saying the bite is too big. Still, it seems the world can't get enough of eBay. Millions of items, from organic chicken breasts to $16,000 breast implants, pass through its auctions every month. And the company also owns PayPal and other less visible pieces of the online pie. By some estimates, online sales now account for 2, 3, even 10% of total sales in the United States, and growing. Tonight on Point, the ruckus at eBay and the future of online commerce. You can join the conversation. How much of your world of buying and selling is migrating online? Are you a frequent eBay buyer? What do you buy? What do you sell? And is eBay the future of global commerce? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now is Gary Rivlin, New York Times Silicon Valley correspondent. He wrote the piece eBay's Joyride in yesterday's Times. Gary is also the author of the books The Plot to Get Bill Gates and The Godfather of Silicon Valley. Gary Rivlin, thanks for being with us tonight.
My pleasure, Tom.
So you've written kind of over a large canvas about eBay, but I wish you'd take us in first to what's got all the ruckus going on at eBay itself. Exactly what has the company done to have its many, many sellers in such a tizzy?
Well, so eBay announced a new set of fees upon sellers. Some of them were just a nickel here, a nickel there for those who host auctions on eBay. But eBay also has stores, 160,000 or so stores here in the U.S., almost a quarter of a million worldwide. And people, just like any online store, can sell whatever they sell, from children's clothes to chicken breasts or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's where the fee hikes were the highest. They raised the cost of hosting a store from a monthly $9.95 a month to $15.95 a month. But the real big hit was that they're charging now an 8% commission on all sales, where it had been until a few weeks ago 5.25% percent commission.
And that's got everybody's knickers in a twist there. Now, the online stores, these are not auction elements. These are fixed price parts of eBay. Is that right?
Right. That's some of the untold part of the eBay story, I think, or the part of the story that many people don't know. It started clearly as an auction site, but, you know, increasingly over the years, as, you know, millions, tens of millions of buyers migrated to eBay, they understood that some people didn't want to buy things through an auction method. So on auctions, you could hit the buy it now feature. So instead of kind of bidding it up to a certain price, you could say, no, I'll pay $20 for that right now, and it's sold. But then they introduced a few years back stores, which have been very, very popular. I think part of the problem here is that this is the fifth set of fee increases that eBay has imposed in 5 years. So it's not just this one increase, it's this increase upon increase upon increase upon increase.
Gary Rivlin, we're going to hear more from people who sell online and track sellers online about that kind of revolt that's underway. But we should step back with us for a second and look at the eBay story more broadly. I remember Meg Whitman talking years ago now about how eBay would transform commerce worldwide. And this was back in the days when they sold little kind of tchotchkes. And she said, we'll sell cars, we'll sell real estate, we'll sell basically anything and everything. And people laughed. It's no longer a laughing matter. They do sell almost everything, don't they?
You know, many people thought in the late 1990s that, you know, this is a very interesting business. It's kind of a worldwide flea market. But no one really figured that it would be, you know, much more than a very interesting niche business. And, you know, it turns out that in our heads, I think Amazon.com is what's synonymous with buying things online. Well, it turns out that eBay is three times more profitable than Amazon. Sure, they sell they make most of it, or their biggest selling item dollars wise is cars now. Mm-hmm. They sell pretty much everything. They haven't quite got to the point of real estate, but they're trying real hard. They're moving in that direction.
They're more profitable than Amazon because they don't have to handle any physical material. They just are the forum for transactions.
I mean, that's what's just amazing about what eBay does is they don't touch any product. They don't have any warehouses. They don't ship anything to anyone. You know, really what it is, as you all described it in the introduction, it's just the world's largest shopping mall. And so, you know, they're just collecting fees here. For instance, you just can't post something on eBay for free. You have to pay a fee from, I don't know, a quarter to a couple of bucks, depending on, you know, how expensive an item it is. When you sell the item, you have to pay a commission to eBay. It's 5.25% for those things sold through an auction. It's now 8% through the stores. And then there's a million little fees. The Buy It Now feature costs money. If you want a photo when people do a search, for, you know, comic books. We want to find comic books. You want a little picture of your comic book there, then that's going to cost you extra money. So, you know, people kind of complain that this thing that just turned into just such a cool little place for people to sell things is just kind of nickel and diming them to death.
Nickel and diming, being nickel and dime, they're complaining in the biggest shopping center on the planet, and it's online. Gary Rivlin, stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation from Natick, Massachusetts, Ina Steiner. She's editor and publisher of auctionbytes.com. It's an online newsletter that reports on the online auction world. Ina Steiner, thanks for being with us tonight.
Hi, Tom. Thank you.
So we know there are competitors out there. Yahoo has an auction site, and Overstock has an auction site, even Amazon to some extent. How serious is this revolt among the many thousands of sellers on eBay?
Well, I think it's serious in the longer term view. I don't think too many sellers said, okay, we're leaving eBay, and that's it. I think a lot of eBay sellers said, we've got to really decrease our dependence on eBay.
I know we've got this funny kind of melange of images of people who sell on eBay, everything from brick and mortar, as we used to say in the 90s, retailers who also sell online, to kind of mom and pop operations run out of a kitchen or a living room. What is the range of people who now make their living from selling stuff on eBay?
Well, it is. It's a very diverse group, and in fact, that's why you haven't really seen a lot of seller groups form and work together, because most of these sellers are entrepreneurs, and they don't necessarily play well together, and they all have different needs. We saw in late 2003 a group of sellers band together. They're some of eBay's biggest sellers. And they were really lobbying for volume discounts from eBay. The smaller sellers really fear that because it just makes it more competitive for them. So if you look at, just like if you look at eBay itself, it just, you can just about find anything on eBay. It's a diverse product offering. Mm-hmm. It's the same with the sellers, a really diverse group.
And take us into some of those. I mean, what portion are significant retailers apart from eBay, and what portion are kind of eBay-only sellers who exist entirely on what they sell on eBay?
Well, a lot of people grew up on eBay, so to speak. You did have the antiques dealers and the retailers who already knew how to run a business and had brick-and-mortar stores or show experience. But a lot of people came on who kind of got hooked on it and really grew a business out of nothing. And they're now saying to themselves, do I go beyond eBay?
Beyond eBay meaning go to its competitors?
Yeah, a lot of the sellers are now saying, if you look at the stores on eBay, you'll find that sellers have to do a lot of marketing themselves.
Right.
It's not quite like the auction side where eBay drives buyers to the auction listings. So people are saying, if I have to do the marketing myself anyway, maybe I should really have my own website. And people are doing that, and they sell on eBay in an auction format in order to try to acquire customers over to their own website.
I think people may imagine a kind of nickel and dime income stream as well. Are these kind of, you know, second incomes, retired people, housewives selling beanie babies, or what kind of money do people make on eBay?
It really varies across the board. We see people, some of the high volume sellers making millions in revenue on eBay.
Selling what kind of things?
DVDs.
Oh, okay.
Clothing. Mm-hmm. Clothing, shoes.
Okay. Okay.
But you do have, I think it's probably the 80-20 rule here, mm-hmm. where you have 20% of the sellers driving 80% of the revenue. Mm. So the vocal group of small sellers who have their needs, you may hear them more, and maybe they're not making up the majority of revenue for eBay. Mm. But I have to say, it's the smaller sellers. I mean, I know sellers who will gift wrap the items that they send and put little cards in, because that's what the eBay experience is for buyers. It's fun. It's a different. It's unique. And it's those small sellers who, in eBay's view may be insignificant, but I think it just really makes eBay what it is.
And lots of little events like that adding up to a very, very big business. eBay's stock up 80% last year after years of growth. This year, down 28%. Gary Rivlin, you say there are some bigger issues here that eBay's going to have to address.
Yeah, I mean, I talked to one seller who said, rents go up. That's just the reality in our world. What her complaint is, and what the complaint of many sellers is that they feel like they're getting less for their money. I mean, it's almost like they're paying more rent, but the building's getting shabbier, and there's issues around crime and such.
I mean, the kind of complaint you'd hear at any shopping mall.
They complain about fraud. That is really kind of starting to undermine people's trust in eBay. They complain that they're getting less bidders per auction. They complain that they're getting less money for each successful auction. They're complaining that less auctions end up with a winning bid. So there's just this range of complaints, and I think it's the timing. If this is coming, this huge increase is coming at the same time that they're feeling frustrated.
Those complaints kind of coming to a head. Gary Rivlin, Ina Steiner, please stand by. We're going to take a short break here. We're talking tonight about the ruckus at eBay and the future of online commerce. Join us, 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the ruckus at eBay and the future of online commerce. My guest tonight, Gary Rivlin, covers Silicon Valley for the New York Times. Ina Steiner is with us as well. She's editor and publisher of auctionbytes.com. It's an online newsletter reporting on the online auction world. You can join the conversation as well. How much of your world of buying and selling has migrated online? Have we entered the era of frictionless, perfectly efficient commerce thanks to eBay? And are you a frequent eBay buyer? What do you buy? What's your wildest purchase? On the other hand, is eBay your life, your livelihood? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I want to expand the circle of our conversation now and welcome into it Professor Eric Brynjolfsson. He's director of the Center for E-Business at MIT's Sloan School and joins me in the studio here in Boston tonight. Eric Brynjolfsson, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
So you're listening in on what's going on at eBay. They've got a kind of a revolt. It's not the first that they've had, but it's a significant one among people who sell there. Stock price down 28%, a big hit, even though it's up something like 20-fold since the company came on the scene. And these bigger issues of fraud, of declining numbers in certain key metrics around eBay. You look at e-commerce writ large. Where do you see it going? Is eBay at the forefront? Is this e-commerce?
eBay is definitely at the forefront of one part of e-commerce, and I wouldn't be too worried about the stock prices bouncing around. It's amazing how much you mentioned it went up 80% last year. Amazon's gone up and down, double, triple in different ways. That has a lot to do with people's expectations and guesses about things that are happening years out. If you look at the underlying trends in the volume of commerce going over the internet, that's been growing quite steadily for close to a decade now, 20-30% per year. And I think it's likely to continue that way for another at least 5 years.
To the point that it's reached what we've seen, this very big spread of the total portion of U.S. Commerce that is now online. We've seen everything from 2 to 3 to 10%. What's your sense of where it stands?
Well, that's kind of a trick question because people count online commerce so many different ways. Last time I bought a car, I did just about everything online except for the actual transaction.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of the reason you see this big spread. Some people count travel, some people don't. That said, I think the Commerce Department has a reasonably reliable number, and that's around 2% of retail sales, which I think suggests there's a lot of headroom for it to double and redouble again.
So what is going to keep it growing? When you look at eBay, how much of the kind of, perfect form of e-commerce does this represent? Or is it still a crude version of where we're headed?
I think it's still a crude version of where we're headed. I think they're very much out in front on a lot of things in terms of their ability to lower transaction costs, and that has opened up all sorts of new markets that literally didn't exist before. I mean, all these used goods that are for sale, there just wasn't any meaningful market for that before. And it was also interesting how they demonstrated by adding, they can add new categories in a matter of 3 or 4 years. They went from zero to being the number one seller of automobiles, as was mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of other places, especially internationally, you can see them adding. But I don't think we're anywhere near exhausting the innovation that can be done on the internet. We'll see other new companies, you know, ones that we can't think of yet, emerging in the next 5 years.
And doing what kind of thing? I mean, here's an auction plus stores. What else is there?
One of the big things the internet does is it really radically lowers transaction costs and allows for a lot more customization and personalization of commerce. So I think we'll see a tremendous amount of increased personalizing of the product offerings that people are getting, even the prices that people are paying, coupons and so forth, nonlinear pricing, economists call it. Mm-hmm. Even if you look at existing products, we did an analysis of what's being sold at Amazon, and about half of the books that are sold at Amazon are ones that you wouldn't find on the shelves of a conventional bookstore. So there's been a big shift towards what we call the long tail of relatively obscure, customized products.
A huge expansion on that front. Gary Rivlin in San Francisco, Eric Brynjolfsson is saying very low transaction costs online, and yet I remember I had a pass through this whole world myself, and people talked about, they said, whoever wins a category, even though their costs of doing business are low, they will be able to ratchet those costs up once they've won a category, like eBay as the lead auction site. Is this hike up to an 8% bite of each transaction, is this the sign that eBay is trying to now, you know, put the screws in? It believes it's got not monopoly power, but dominant power.
Well, now, eBay would say that the reason they raised these fees wasn't to add to their bottom line, but just to correct an imbalance in the eBay ecosystem. I mean, what they try to do, they're sort of like the mad scientists at work, and if they see too many people going to stores and not enough people going to auctions, they say, we need to increase some of the pricing on the store side to rebalance it. Now, you might not believe that that's their only motivation, you know, for the good of the ecosystem. But
8%
I think
is also a nice bite if you're on the taking end.
But you know, it's. I think eBay is learning a hard lesson here that they don't have total control over pricing. They had 24,000 people sign an online petition, according to one website. They've had 7,000 stores shut down, and you know, I don't know if that number is true or not. I have no reason to doubt it, but anecdotally, you're hearing a lot of that, of people who are just saying, you know, something, I'm fed up, so I'm going to go to a competing auction site, or more likely, they're going to say, you know, something, eBay was this great learning ground for me to figure out e-commerce, and now you know, I'm just going to go online. I'm going to open up my own web store, and you know, use Yahoo and Google AdWords searches. If you're selling shoes, you pay some money for the word shoes and send some traffic to your site. So I think their biggest competitor, ironically, are the very people or the confidence that they've given the very people who have been their best sellers.
They're training an army of online retailers to perhaps do it on their own. They're eating some crow now. Now, the North American president, William Cobb, going online to answer emails one by one, going to online town hall meetings, trying to settle the angry mob of online retailers. Some of them are on the phone line right now, and I want to turn to them. Ed's calling from Boston. Hi, Ed. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
We're great, thanks.
This is a great topic for a show. I've been on eBay for 5 years, and you know, your guest just hit the nail on the head. I mean, it has allowed me to go out and go beyond eBay to buy stuff. You know, I bought a LCD TV only because eBay gave me the confidence to go out and do e-commerce.
Right.
And I got so sick of eBay. I mean, I still do it. It's more of a hobby for me. I make a couple $1,000s a year off it.
Now, are you a seller or a buyer or both?
Both. Honestly, both. I mean,
What kind of thing do you sell on eBay?
Collectibles, action figures, things like that.
Okay, right. So Star Wars figure from 1982 or whatever.
Exactly.
Right.
And to be honest with you, they get you three ways. They get you when you list it. They get you when you sell it. And the majority of times that I collect money, I get it through PayPal, and they take a chunk too.
Now, of course, eBay owns PayPal, Gary Rivlin.
Right. And if you have an issue
right.
and you call PayPal, they will claim that they are part one in each other,
right.
but they're separate.
So they get you six ways to Sunday. Ed, we've got it, and we appreciate right. your call. Ina Steiner, what about it first, just looking at the call that says they get you every which way. From your perspective, is eBay gouging the people that use it, or is it charging reasonable fees?
Well, you know, it is true that eBay has to figure out if they make a change in the pricing structure, how is that going to affect seller behavior? One of the things they did was they increased the fees for gallery. That shows a picture. When you look at the search results,
mm-hmm.
you see a little photograph next to it, so you don't actually have
not just
to click
text.
Into each listing.
Mm-hmm.
A gallery would be a good feature for buyers. They can quickly see if it's the
sure.
item they want or
mm-hmm.
not. So that's counterintuitive to increase the gallery fees.
Because it diminishes the user experience if people don't put those photos up.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
The fees that they raised in stores, if you're a seller, there are some items that are going to do better at an auction, and there are some things that are going to do better. They're not going to fly off the shelves, but you need to stock your shelves with a broad range of items.
Mm-hmm.
By increasing the fees, they're saying to people, we want you to go and sell these things at in an auction format, but from the seller's point of view, that might not make sense. What eBay Stores has done is it has basically helped eBay keep people on eBay selling on eBay rather than going out and starting their own site.
Right.
But eBay does not drive traffic to the stores the same way it does for auctions. So I think their timing is not right. I think if they were able to provide more buyers, we wouldn't really be really having this conversation so much.
Right.
I think people always gripe about eBay fees, but if they're making money, if they're finding buyers, they put up with it. And this is now, I think you're finding that eBay's reached a certain point in a lot of the categories where they're just not they're really good at bringing sellers in, but not as good at bringing the buyers in.
And you've got to have the buyers there. Gary Rivlin, of course, they make money. eBay makes money in many ways now. As our caller pointed out, they own PayPal. They bought it for $1.5 billion a couple years back, and it now accounts for, as you report, a quarter of their revenue. This is the online payment system where they get a bite out of everything purchased, and they also let others use PayPal for a fee.
Right, and it's like a credit card where they're charging the sellers a 2.9% fee of all the money that is going through PayPal. And it was a brilliant purchase. They bought it 2 years ago for $1.5 billion. It was 2002. And people were just rolling their eyes. Are you crazy, eBay? This is the
right.
dot-com post-massacre, and you're
yep.
paying $1.5 billion. And it was a great purchase. I mean, they're projecting they're going to have $4 billion in revenue with $1 billion coming from PayPal. And the sky's the limit for PayPal. I mean, right now they have minimal, under 2% penetration into small and medium-sized businesses on the Internet. And they're really feeling with a big, big push that they could convince a lot of retailers online to use PayPal.
Eric Brynjolfsson, what about this issue of the buyer experience? There's always the temptation to come in and lay down all kinds of fees and things to make money right now. Do you see eBay as chewing into its own future by the way it's trying to pull out revenues now or not?
Well, Gary and I are right. They're definitely trying to orchestrate exactly the right balance of all these things. And part of it is that they're harvesting some investments they made earlier. They've built up a huge installed base of people. They are driving a lot of buyers to the site and a lot of sellers, and that's why they go to it. And it's very hard for competitors to break in. I know Yahoo and Amazon have tried very hard to break in. They can't, so they've got somewhat of a monopoly power. But part of what eBay is doing is they've got a 1,000 people working on improving the buyer experience and the seller experience. Some of their innovations, like the rating system, I think have been very creative and very successful.
Rating the quality of the seller?
Exactly. They've got a reputation
right.
system. And that has made it possible to generate trust among strangers and really help fuel the growth of it. And as a consequence, they're now able to harvest a little bit. In turn, I see them investing not so much in some of their existing businesses, but in new product lines and internationally where they see most of their growth coming.
And we'll talk about that. Tim's calling from Nashua, New Hampshire. Hi, Tim. You're on the air.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Well, I've been in this space for the last 5 or 6 years, survived the dot-com, and I fear a three-way perfect storm against e-commerce.
What's it look like?
It looks like anti-phishing.
Anti-phishing. Describe that. That's phishing with a PH.
Yeah, phishing with a PH. That's where advanced hackers mimic people's banks or commerce sites and steal their identities and their credit cards. And this is a really strong, growing trend across the world.
So this is where I think I'm plugging my info into a well-known online site, and instead it's some kind of fake site, and I'm giving my credit card number away.
Yeah, they look very authentic, and they're quite hard to detect. That's a bad thing. Another bad thing is click fraud. We talked already about the ads on the web. Search Amazon and Google for years have been virtually the biggest things, only making money on the web. And click fraud is getting to be the dirty little secret of the web.
Now, what is click fraud again?
Click fraud is where people pay for clicks. People pay to be the number one spot on Google somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And click fraud is when someone else goes and clicks that link, either to drive up the price of the competitor's ads.
Some
kind of devilment. It sounds...
So you can pay a shop full of clickers to sit around all day bankrupting your competition.
Or get a machine to do it for you.
Or get a machine, of course. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So this stuff always has been huge, but it's getting more and more huge.
Yeah, and the final piece?
Search is so powerful. Well, it's a double thing. One is incompetence, such as we've seen at eBay recently. The other one is spyware. There is a massive bed of undetected robot applications out there on people's machines, many of whom are dormant. And when this stuff wakes up and takes information, sends it off to who knows where, two or three of these things happening at the same time to one person, they could say, well, you know, heck with this, I'm out of e-commerce. E-commerce took a long time to get there, and it's relatively fragile. And you know, me and my colleagues, we do wake up in cold sweats sometimes thinking, well, what if it all goes away?
Tim, let me ask you, you sound pretty well plugged in. Why would that spyware be sitting there dormant? Once you get it planted on a personal computer, why not have it doing its job, whatever that is?
Well, if its job gets noticed, I mean, you've probably been attacked at some point, your kids don't learn some music, and it drives you crazy.
Yeah.
Until you finally tear hair and get rid of the darn thing by any means or ever.
Right.
But you put it in there as a sleeper mode, and it sits there, and once a month it does one thing, and that one thing could be a credit card number, it could be some other piece of information, and eventually you will lose confidence in your ability to log on and do something secure. If you look at Europe, just take a quick parallel, Europe, apart from search and email, it's basically a wasteland as far as internet e-commerce goes. It's nowhere near as huge as it is over here.
Because a lack of trust is there?
Partly lack of trust, mostly because of dial-up lines. We've had local free calls for a long time, and Europe hasn't. So the internet was a long time coming. But they have for Germans, for example, have only just got credit cards and really don't like buying online. Mm. So there's a lot of very slow take-up over there. And we've taken off like a rocket ship in the last 5 or 6 years. It's been fantastic. A lot of folks are back in work now. The dot-com has more or less been recovered. But I do worry about the fragility. It's picking the big three of trust in banking, trust in search, and the relevance of search, and the relevance of the clicks in search, and the underlying nastiness of the internet out there. Those three things could take down e-commerce.
Tim, we've got it. You know your stuff, and we appreciate your call. Gary Rivlin, let's pick those up. Phishing, first of all. Number one, since we're talking about eBay tonight, is this a problem for eBay? If I think I'm at eBay, well, am I actually going to be at RussianMob.com giving my credit card to somebody in, I don't know where, St. Petersburg?
Oh, it is a huge problem. In fact, the Times this morning has an article by one of my colleagues about this, that in a way, eBay is more susceptible to this than most other companies out there. Sure, we get these spam emails that are look amazingly like they're legitimate from a Citibank or whatever, but eBay, their whole way of interacting with customers is via email. So yeah, what we're starting to see is hijacked accounts. You're a seller, and somehow somebody gets access to your account, and suddenly they start doing fraudulent sales through what to other people see, this person has a great rating. They have a 99 out of 100. And, you know, suddenly they're just ripping off people very quickly
Some pirate is piggybacking on that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm. Exactly. So, I mean, I think phishing is a big problem across the board in eBay, in part because it's so large, and in part because it's a virtual world. It threatens in particular.
Ina Steiner, I know I've just got you for another minute here. What's your sense of these credibility issues for eBay and for other e-commerce sites? Do you see a perfect storm brewing out there, or is trust at a place now where it's going to be perpetual, going to go on?
Well, I think that really it's up to the industry players to move against some of these issues about fraud and phishing. We first wrote about phishing back in June of 2002. That was 3 years ago. It's only gotten worse. You know, same with fraud. We had written an article in 2002 about escrow site fraud that was taking place on eBay. They weren't taking it seriously. It's a lot to do with user education. eBay's getting a little better about that, but I think that companies really need to do more. A lot of these scams really rely on social engineering. That's when you don't actually have the technology skills to go in and hack a database. Mm. You get the person to give you their credit card number, their password.
Just ask for it and have them hand it over. Ina Steiner, it's been terrific having you tonight. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
Ina Steiner, editor and publisher of Auction Bytes. That's BYTES.com. Gary Rivlin, Eric Brynjolfsson, please stand by. We're talking tonight about the world of eBay and how it's changing the way we buy, sell, and transact almost everything. You can join us. Do you, can you, make a living as an eBay retailer? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the ruckus at eBay and the future of online commerce. You can join us tonight. eBay Merchants is the world's new main street. It's new bazaar working for you. And listeners, how much of our buying and selling will one day be online? Are we topping out or just beginning? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined in the studio tonight by Eric Brynjolfsson. He's professor and director of the Center for E-Business at MIT Sloan School. And from San Francisco by Gary Rivlin. He covers Silicon Valley for the New York Times. And right now we're joined from Benicia, California, by Charles Peden. He makes jewelry from sea glass and sells a lot of it on eBay. His company is called By the Bay Treasures. Charles Peden, thanks for being with us tonight.
Well, thanks for having me on.
So give us a first-hand report. How much do you sell on eBay and how's it going?
It's going okay. I'd say 90% of my sales at this time are through eBay.
What's your average price point, Charles? What's your stuff selling
my
for?
My average price, it actually varies depending on what I've been selling that month, but I'd say it's probably around $8 to $15.
Okay, so you've got to sell quite a bit to turn it into a business.
That's correct.
And are you getting the volume you need from selling on eBay?
Well, I did about 2,000 in business last month.
That's a lot of $8 to $15 items.
Well, some of those, like I said, are a little higher than 8 to 10.
And what about the recent changes in the fee structure and all the fees? How's it hitting you? Is it still working for you?
It's still working for me. What I'm finding is that I have to change my tactics. I have to evolve with the marketplace. Any smart businessman knows that the marketplace is a constantly evolving atmosphere. It's not going to remain static. And, you know, just like trends continually change, so do venues. However, that being said, I do have a beef with eBay and the billing practices and so forth that they put out there. I tried to research the fees prior to this interview.
Yeah.
And found it very difficult to find all the information on one page. In fact, I had to download several different pages off of eBay's website in order to find all the fees that they had.
Well, they don't want to be too obvious. Out of
Absolutely
that $2,000 a month in sales that you're doing roughly, Charles, what are you paying to eBay?
22% of that goes to fees.
22%, that's to eBay,
yeah,
fees.
Yeah, my conversion rate's about 39%.
Wow, that's a lot. Now, is this your whole employment? Is this your full income, or is this a part-time thing?
It started out as a part-time thing just to get me through the winter months.
Yeah.
I work throughout the summertime with a company called The Great Event.
Okay.
I do event hosting and so forth.
Like DJ work?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I did this as something to help me get through. My wife couldn't work at the time, and, you know, I had some sea glass I had found and put it on eBay. Next thing I knew, it just kind of took off like a rocket.
That is amazing.
And
sea glass.
I started making jewelry with it,
yeah.
And now I've sold to 10 countries, you know, and I love it. I got to say, eBay's great for what they've done. But then to turn around and charge this much and jack up their fees this much, once you've already gotten yourself into an established marketplace.
Yeah.
That's where I find it unsettling.
That's
like
pinching
if my
you.
ISP provider was to jack up their fees
right.
more than double, or
right.
you know, it's just inexcusable.
Charles, through the miracle of producer's legwork, I know that you actually did some DJing for an eBay Christmas party.
That is correct.
How did that go down with you, my dear customer of eBay?
Well, you know, I'm here in San Francisco or Benicia, which is just north
yeah.
of San Jose, which is where they're headquartered. And I have to say that seeing their luxury vehicles pull in one after the other, including the Ferraris and so forth, was a little disheartening when I had struggled so hard to pay my seller fees.
Right. You're out there selling your sea glass, and they're driving the Ferrari to work. I guess that's the American way, Charles.
It is, and you have to take it for what it is. But at the same time, I have to say that I don't look at eBay as my sole venue. I look at it as a marketing tool.
So are you ready to jump off and do it on your own or go to one of these other sites?
Oh, absolutely not. I've built my own website. Oh,
okay, so you're ready to go independent
correct.
At least try it.
Right, and eBay does allow you to close your email communications with your customers with including the link to your website. You can't do any promotional stuff in there, but you can put a link to your website.
Charles, you've given us an insight into how it works for one guy in Benicia, California. Perhaps we'll see you as a major e-tailer on your own site one day.
One thing I'd like to add,
yes, sir.
That is my invoice for last month.
Yeah.
$329 was the invoice, and it was 64 pages long. The month prior, I had a 180-page invoice.
From eBay that they mailed you to pay on your bill, your $500 and some a month.
Well, yeah, they send you an email telling you what your total is due, and then they tell you that you have to go to their site to download your invoice because it's too large to include in the email. And what I find is that their invoicing practice is ridiculous.
That's a note to eBay. No 100-page invoices, please. Charles Peden, thanks.
180.
180. Thank you so much for being with us tonight. Good luck with your sea glass jewelry sales.
Thank you.
But eBay can't lose for winning here. I mean, you know, here they are listing every single fee that they charge. I mean, sure, they have a million, you know, fees. So, I mean, I don't know. I kind of give them kudos for, listen, you want to read every single little nickel or dime we've charged you? Here they are. I mean, I think
every titch and tittle. Yeah, I hear you.
I mean, I think it's important to note that, you know, I spent last week some time on the message boards. eBay, again, to its credit, on its own website, allows its sellers to say anything they want about eBay pro or con. And, you know, there's very little editing.
So they're airing it out without a censor there.
Right, and they take great pride in that, as I think they should. And, you know, on the message board, sure, there's a lot of anger. There is an uproar. But I also think it's important to note that, you know, for every five messages that complain about that, there's a couple of messages saying, hey, stop whining, figure out the system. I mean, Einstein was saying this before, that, okay, if these fees are going up, maybe you should go through auctions. Maybe that's the better strategy here. And, you know, I also think it needs to be said that these people are competitors. I mean, you know, it's a very competitive environment. You know, eBay has the commercials that have smiley faces and make it all seem so sweet.
Mm-hmm.
But who's kidding who here? I mean, you know,
it's dog-eat-dog.
Yeah, I mean, anyone else is trying to sell sea glass ain't liking Charles over here. So
right. Let's get another call. Steve is calling from Derry, New Hampshire. Hi, Steve. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
We're good, thanks, Steve. What are you thinking?
Well, I can just tell you I've listened a little to your program tonight, and anybody to find problems with eBay, I know there are a lot of nothing's perfect. It's about as good as a gold mine can be.
Steve, you're breaking up on me a little bit, but I hear you saying you love eBay.
Oh, I love eBay. Can you hear me any better now?
Yeah, I got you a little better. Are you a seller or a buyer on eBay?
I am a seller on eBay, and I was in the auction business before I went to eBay, and by, you know, instead of selling to, of course, 300 people in a hall, and you sell to literally millions or exposing it to millions of people around the world, you can't go wrong.
So it's working for you, and the higher fees, you don't mind them?
I don't mind them. I think that eBay is going to have to make a decision how greedy they want to get, and eventually the water will come to a certain level, and they'll either survive or they'll charge you so much it'll just get to the point where people will drop out.
At a point, too much is too much, but I'm sure they'll be watching that. But there's a big hooray for eBay. Steve, thanks for calling. Let's get one more call here. Mike is calling from Woodstock, Illinois. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Hi. How you doing?
Good, thanks.
I'm an eBay seller. I've been since 1998.
And you have a store? You're one of these thousands of stores on eBay?
I have a store. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've had a store for quite a few years.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a big fan of eBay. I mean, I started with the garage sale stuff and then went to auctions and bought stuff and resold it. And lately I've been getting into industrial equipment, which has been very profitable.
Well, from yard sales to industrial equipment, you've really evolved with eBay.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm a machinist by trade,
okay,
a machine builder, and
sure,
it was kind of a natural thing. But I did, last month, I did $8,000 in sales. So
this is for real.
Going very well.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But what I never did a whole lot of business out of my store.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of sales out of the store.
Most of it was on the auction side, you mean by that.
Right. And mm-hmm, I would use the store to park things because the listing fees of the store are very low.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
right,
it costs you 30 cents a month to keep something out there. And now with the fees coming up, though, and the cheaper items, it doesn't seem like you make really any money by listing anything that's, you know, not worth a lot of money.
So you're going to pull out of the store and move over to the auction side more heavily?
Well, they had a five-cent listing day on Valentine's Day.
Yeah, okay.
I cleaned out my store and I listed everything.
Yeah.
And I sold about 60% of my store inventory. And now I have just a couple of things in there, and I'm questioning whether I want to keep the store.
Or go to all auction.
Go to all auctions.
Mike, our time is short, but we've got it. I want to turn to Gary Rivlin here. Gary, that seems to be what eBay was hoping, as you said earlier. They wanted to move more people over to auction, and maybe it's working.
Well, I mean, I think it's a little more nuanced than that. They want to move people over to they want to move items over to auction that they think are best sold through the auction method. But I think kind of the bigger point here is, like, sure, people are griping about eBay, and sure, their growth rates are slowing down, but $34 billion worth of stuff was sold over eBay last year. I mean, it's astounding. I mean, you know, this charming little thing has turned into, you know, the largest e-commerce site on the planet. And so I'm not surprised that we're hearing kind of this, well, yeah, sure, I'm a little disappointed they're raising the fees,
yeah,
but boy, isn't eBay great.
It is a miracle. Eric Brynjolfsson, look ahead for us. You said earlier that the experience is going to change. Give us some of the ways in which you expect it to change.
Well, I think that some of the things we've been hearing are just the beginning of a broader set of trends. I think we're going to see a lot more people with conventional stores, businesses, whether they're selling jewelry or cars or mainframe computers, opening up online channels. Already something 80% plus of retailers have online presence.
Mm-hmm.
And they're using it not just to have fixed flat pricing, but really to find ways to customize the relationship that they have with their customer,
mm-hmm,
to a much greater extent. You know, at Amazon, for instance, they know me a lot better than any physical retailer does, and they're able to make recommendations to me for books.
With all the records of your preferences and so on.
Exactly. Some book that maybe 200 people in the world have ever bought before, they recommend to me because they know I'm one of the 201st person who might be interested. So that kind of knowledge is something that we're just beginning to learn to take advantage of, and we'll see a lot more of that.
Smart interaction coming down the pike.
Yeah.
Eric Brynjolfsson, Director of the Center for E-Business at MIT Sloan School, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
My pleasure.
And Gary Rivlin in San Francisco, covering Silicon Valley for the New York Times. Gary, really terrific to have you. Thanks for your story and thanks for joining us tonight.
Great. Thank you.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. In a moment, another scandal at Boeing leads to the resignation of its CEO. This is On Point. President and CEO of Boeing resigned today at the request of the company's board after it was revealed that he violated the company's code of conduct by having an affair with a female executive at Boeing. Harry Stonecipher had been lured out of retirement to help clean up a contracting scandal at the aviation giant. A company investigation concluded that his sexual affair was consensual and that the woman did not report to Stonecipher. But the board decided that his behavior showed poor judgment and impaired his ability to lead the company. Joining me now is Michael O'Neill, finance reporter for the Chicago Tribune, who's been covering the story. Michael, thanks for being with us tonight.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
So this kind of thing goes on. Everybody knows that. How did this come to light? How did this become public?
Well, a whistleblower, like most of these things. Somebody sent the chairman, Lou Platt, a packet of information that about 10 days ago, I guess, that brought some of these allegations to light. And when they started to investigate it, Harry Stonecipher admitted that he was doing that, and it kind of went from there.
Boeing is such an enormous company in an industry that's clearly considered of great strategic and economic importance to the United States. It seems incredible that the CEO of such a company would put his leadership at risk in this way, maybe, and secondly, that the board would It's almost incredible that they'd have him leave over it. I mean, you know how many times this has been papered over or people looked the other way in the past. Why such sensitivity here?
Well, I mean, I think that, the first point is the one that the board was thinking about. I mean, this is a huge, important company, and, you know, this is pretty reckless behavior on the part of the CEO. And Boeing has been through about 2 years of ethics scandals on the defense side. And for, you know, for Harry Stonecipher, who came in kind of on a white horse to help kind of clean all that stuff up, to then get involved in an affair just seems like irresponsible behavior. And I think the board just felt they couldn't afford that.
The board chairman, Lou Platt, said that if certain details of the relationship came to light, it would embarrass the company and cause it harm. What is it that we don't know?
Well, that's not clear. I mean, he said in a conference call this morning that that there wasn't any sexual conduct in the office. There wasn't, you know, that sort of thing going on. So it's not really clear exactly, you know, what was going on that would be so embarrassing. They did intercept some correspondence, which is how the thing came to light in the first place. The whistleblower did, and that, you know, that may contain something embarrassing. But I think mostly they were just thinking that if it came to light through the media, that it would just be overall an embarrassment for a company that's really been under fire for a couple of years.
Mr. Stonecipher is seen as having done well in those years, though.
Yeah, I mean, he's a controversial figure in the sense that he's a real cost cutter, and he's you know, taken the company into this trade war with Airbus, and he's a very hard nosed guy. But he's at the same time you know, raised the stock price significantly and improved profitability. So he's a you know, well liked on Wall Street and will be missed, I think.
Of course, other scandals here, chief among them over the $20 billion air tanker contract that turns out that Boeing had offered a job to the Pentagon official that put that through.
Right. I mean, that was that's kind of what's led to all this trouble. I mean, they offered a job to the woman to you know, work at Boeing, and also you know, found a job for her daughter. So it's, and you know, I mean, that too doesn't seem like necessarily a huge deal, but you know, in this environment, I mean, it's just not tolerated.
Michael O'Neill, the female executive at Boeing, the other half of this affair, is she staying on at the company? Is it known?
Well, she's not being fired nor asked to retire, but the implication in what we were able to glean today is that her life would be very uncomfortable at Boeing. So I don't know whether she would stay or not, but it seems like it'd be a tough thing to do.
And we just got a few seconds left, but your town, Chicago, fought hard to get the Boeing headquarters when it was up in the air a few years ago. How's Chicago feeling about the company at this point?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Chicago, there's about, you know, after all that and all the money spent to lure the company here, you know, millions of dollars, there's only 400 employees that are about that at Boeing. And, you know, I think a lot of people kind of wonder, was it worth it, particularly after all this? But on the other hand, they give a lot of money to the opera and things like that. So, you know.
Maybe so. 400 employees and one less today. The CEO, Michael O'Neill, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Michael O'Neill is a finance reporter for the Chicago Tribune. On Point is produced by Meghna Chakrabarty, Julie Jupp, Rachel Dornhelm, Eileen Amata, Chris O'Connor, John Roberts, James Ross, and Karen Schiffman. Our senior producer is Graham Griffith. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.